So this session is called Become an Office Ninja. My name is Michael Atala, first name on the list, and I've got a few of my colleagues here as well. We're going to all take the stage for a little bit and show you some different things and talk to you about some different things. We have a few goals today. I think I have the clicker in my hand. We'll find out. If I don't, I'm going to have to go get it. Ah, there we go. Cool. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that we've done over the past 12 months since we were last here at TechEd. Last year at TechEd, we brought the new Office 365 and Office capabilities to market, the 2013 capabilities. We've been, as I talked about the other day in the keynote, we've been doing monthly and quarterly releases since then. So we actually have released quite a lot of updates to the Office 365 subscription for Pro Plus, as well as Office 365. Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, Link Online. So I want to go through a few of those things, make sure you didn't miss anything. We're going to talk about a couple of things that haven't quite happened yet, but they're real close and to hitting the Office 365 service. Make sure you know they're coming. We're also going to show you a couple of those things. And then, as the third line says, we're going to show you a bunch of stuff. So hopefully we'll do a lot of demoing today. The goal is just for you guys to get more familiar with Office, some of the features, capabilities that are new, some of the features and capabilities that are not so new, but that maybe you didn't know were there, or maybe would be the perfect thing for you to take that nugget back to your users to let them know ways that they can become more productive. So the first slide I'll put up is, over the last year, a huge amount has happened on mobile platforms and device platforms. So, you know, I think if you've been with Microsoft technology for a long time, you probably wouldn't have 5 or 10 years ago said that Microsoft is the most cross-platform vendor out there. But I think it's pretty hard to argue otherwise now. This table gives you a good view of just where we've landed all of our application capabilities over the past 12 months. A ton of this has landed in the last 12 months. Some of the more notable ones, of course, is that we launched an Office Hub for iPhone, an Office Hub for Android phone. We've announced recently that we'll have web app editing support for Android tablets. We already have that on Safari, on iPad. We've shipped a native mail app for iPhone, iPad, and Android. Well, no, iPhone and iPad, sorry. And we've shipped SkyDrive Pro apps for Windows, the Windows Modern Experience, the Win 8 App Store. We've shipped SkyDrive Pro apps for iPad and iPhone, as well as updates to the Yammer apps, the Link apps, and a bunch of updates to OWA in the browser. So there's just a ton more in the mobile device space, and I encourage you to take a look at those apps. You can see the broad majority of them are in the app stores today, and we're going to show you a couple of them if you haven't seen them. There's a pretty long list of things we've done over the last 12 months. I tried to grab some of the most interesting things, or at least things that I thought might be most interesting. A few of the things that happened really recently that I think most of you probably caught, but just in case. One is we started publishing our Office 365 availability numbers. Not so much a technical thing, except we do have a quarterly release of availability numbers to reflect that we are, in fact, meeting our 3.9's SLA. And we will continue to update that quarterly. About a month ago, we published the last 4 sequential quarters of availability, and now we'll do it on a quarterly basis moving forward on our Office 365 blog. Two things that happened just really recently, just in the last several days, is we doubled the size of Exchange Online mailboxes to 50 gigs from 25. We increased SkyDrive Pro storage from 7 gigs to 25. We increased the single file upload size to 2 gigs. Since the last year of acquiring Yammer, we've actually done quite a lot of integration work. And not too long ago, we made Yammer available as the default news feed for new Office 365 tenants. And those of you that are using Office 365 today can go switch from the SharePoint news feed to the Yammer news feed, which is great if you're an avid Yammer user, especially with the mobile apps that we've delivered over the past year. We've also done Link Skype Federation so that you can connect your Link environment to Skype users outside the company for voice calls, IM conversations, and the like. Those of you that are hardcore PowerShell users, a lot of the Exchange admins out there have grown up on PowerShell over the past 10 years. We released remote PowerShell support for Link Online, so if you're in the Office 365 service, you can use PowerShell for both Exchange and Link Online. Last year, in the same session or a similar one, I showed that we could open PDF files in Word, and somebody in the audience said, does that mean we can finally get rid of Acrobat? I abstained from answering the question. However, we have since released PDF Reflow for Word web apps, so now you can open PDFs in the web app as well, which is a great, it really extends the experience on PDF in Office quite a bit. We've also done a ton in the Excel web app. It's one of the ones that got the most updates. These are only a few of them. There's actually six things buried in there. With hyphens and such, but doing things like freeze panes and snapping header rows and data validation for pull-down menus and cells, things that are really fundamental to the spreadsheet experience and the Excel desktop app have all come to the web app now, so it's really richening and enriching the web app experience. In the coming really soon time period, this first section of Office web app changes, we had a blog back in May that you may have read talking about a bunch of stuff coming to the web apps. Some of it was the Excel stuff that I just mentioned, which has already landed. We have a few more things coming in the next several months, a bunch of new features to Word and PowerPoint, editing support on Chrome on Android tablets so that you can do, you can actually more, right now you have view-only support, you'll have editing support, and real-time co-authoring. So today we have what we elegantly call same-time co-authoring, we'll have real-time co-authoring. Today some of the real-time co-authoring has already landed in the PowerPoint web app, so if you go out and play with it a little bit, you'll start to see how close we're getting to real-time. Over the next few months, you'll see Word, Excel, PowerPoint all get that, and OneNote all get that real-time co-authoring capabilities. One of the other major things we announced in the last several months that is coming really, really soon is Power BI for Office 365. I won't talk a ton about Power BI. I showed Power Map, which is a component of it, on the keynote, and a bunch of you probably got to play with it down in the Microsoft stand downstairs on that big, beautiful PPI board that I knelt elegantly in front of during the keynote the other day. We're going to show it to you on a smaller screen today that appears to be functioning. So hopefully you'll get a chance to see a little bit more of Power Map and Power Query as part of the Power BI package. That was really it. That was it for my slides. We have a couple more slides to support some of the demos, but first thing that I wanted to do is I want to show you some of the stuff that we've landed on non-Microsoft platforms. It's both an exciting and a boring demo in the sense that it is the same applications that you know and love, but I'm going to grab a couple of the enemy's products over here and give you a sense of what they look like. I am going to figure... Bear with me while I try to remember which input is which device. Come on. Anybody wants to yell out help? That's fine. There we go. So this probably looks familiar to a few of you. Hopefully not many of you. Did I just turn off the screen? I did. All right. So few apps running on iPad that you may or may not have had a chance to play with. I think the most compelling of the apps that we've landed on the iPad in recent months is Owa for iPad and iOS and iPhone. One of the biggest investments in Exchange 2013 that many of you probably have seen is the new Outlook web app. All HTML5, super rich. One of the things that doesn't land if you're used to using it in a web browser is that we actually have designed that same code base to span just about every form factor you can imagine using OWA on. And it means something different than it did in previous versions of OWA and in many other mail web apps, which is on a smaller form factor, make the browser smaller. Which isn't super elegant and doesn't necessarily improve the user experience. So we have actually gone so far as to say, when we recognize a form factor like a tablet that is optimized for touch, we'll present a different column layout, a different form layout, so that it is optimized for that experience. And the same goes for a phone. If you're using an iPhone, you get the same newly optimized single column view versus a two column view versus a three column view. So you get the most relevant information right in front of you and still the ability to navigate. So let me jump into this. This is OWA for iPad. This is what might look familiar if you've been accustomed to using Outlook web app in Exchange 2013 or in Office 365. The difference is, instead of having a third column with your folders, you've got them hidden over here, but easy to get to if you need to. You also see the spacing on folder lists is pretty functional from a touch perspective. You see basic conversation view is here. You can touch through pretty easily to load emails. You'll notice all of the richness that you'd expect from OWA and Outlook, from a photo inclusion, reply buttons, the sort of three-dot menus that we've become accustomed to. We have a few things that are a little more touch-optimized that you wouldn't get on a desktop. For example, the ability to do the very iPad-esque swipe to the left, swipe to the right to get a set of quick actions you can take, and you can take those actions on multiple messages if you swipe more, so you get three conversations to mark as read, mark as unread, et cetera. The calendar view is also pretty complete and as rich as you'd expect in OWA and Outlook. One of the things that we did again here in Calendar is we introduced a new view of the calendar that is optimized for something that doesn't have quite the real estate as a big screen. So you're looking at this sort of day view right here where you have the full month calendar, but on the right-hand side, you can see that you've got what's happening right now, the company meeting in a few minutes. If I go here, same thing, you'll get tomorrow, Thursday's schedule or Friday's. This is obviously still set to Pacific US time zone, which is why it thinks it's Wednesday. But the same kind of functionality, and I can jump forward month to month. I can jump back to today. I've got all the views that you've come to know and love, whether it's the week view or the work week view. And then the day view, of course, which not quite as interesting today since we only have one meeting today, evidently. The creating new meeting requests and new emails, again, because we don't have a windowing environment where you can really alt-tab and open multiple windows, we do overlays, which makes it super easy to enter a new meeting on the side over here. I'll get this out of the way for a second. Basic, we present the most basic of meeting information right away to really get you moving, but if you need more details, you can click that and you get a full screen overlay that allows you to add additional information. A set of meeting is online so that you can add link data, et cetera. The contact list, similarly rich, photos, contact information from the gal. It includes all of the linked information, so you can see it's pulling information from Outlook and SharePoint and the directory. I get org view, et cetera. See if I get an organization. I don't know if he's in the org chart. Maybe not. Too bad for Alex. And then one more thing that I'll show you in this app real quickly is at the keynote the other day, I showed you the Bing Maps app as an example of the new app ecosystem and app platform that we have in Office. And that same app platform is available as part of OWA, and as a result, it extends to every device that OWA ships on, so that includes iPad and iPhone. So if, for example, here's that same email that I actually showed in this inbox during that keynote, and here's that same Bing Maps app running right here. And one of the notable things about this is that this is not just, this is not a OWA version of the app, this is the same app, same code running. Deployed to both OWA and Outlook, so you get that reach to the web apps, and that's the same. That same is true across Word, Excel, and PowerPoint web apps. The apps are this will run the same code base, apps for Office code base. So that's sort of OWA for iPad. For those of you who hadn't seen it, we also shipped SkyDrive Pro for iPad. So another example of your ability to extend Office your Access Office 365 to the iPad and the iPhone. This is. Perhaps, again, one of the more boring demos I can show because it literally is a list of all your documents in SkyDrive Pro, but it is there on the iPad for you. Another app that has really, really changed over the past 10 years, I showed it briefly the other day on Windows Phone, is OneNote. Now, OneNote for iPad has been out for a little while. We've shipped a couple updates to it. I'm breaking disclosure rules a little bit by telling you that there will be a pretty substantial update to this that I really hope to show you today, except that it officially releases today at 8 a.m. Pacific time, which is like 12 hours from now. So if you have an iPad and you are an avid user of OneNote, take a look at the App Store in the next 12, 13 hours, and you'll see an update that includes a number of new capabilities, including the ability to add sections and modify OneNote in a richer way. So this is, you know, the same OneNote that you'd expect. This is the notebook that I used in the keynote the other day. You see that what to bring list. In fact, those are the changes that I made on stage the other day. So you still got that. So really rich, synced SkyDrive available to you on this device just like it would be anywhere else. Link also available. I'm not going to jump into that right now. I'm going to switch to the iPhone that I've got over here, assuming it participates. Yeah.
this one.
So another device you might find familiar, you see a few apps on there that look a little more like Microsoft apps. That's because we've shipped quite a lot on this one as well. The one I'm gonna show you is the bottom left there, you see Office Mobile. So one of the things we shipped in the past year is the Office Mobile hub for, of course, on Windows Phone, it ships natively, as well as Windows Phone 8, it ships natively. It was an add-on to 7, and then we have Office Hub for iPhone and Office Hub for Android Phone. So this is your access to your most recent documents. So the MRU, or the most recent documents, most recently used documents that you see when you open a Word doc on Windows, same most recently used documents here. So here are docs that I've accessed today at the top of that list right here. And I have the same ability to open those docs in a Word experience right here inside of iPhone. You'll also notice that I jumped to the, it said resuming briefly, it's actually jumping to the last location. So for those of you that have seen last location roaming across Word and Excel and Word and PowerPoint, it's saving the last page I was at. So instead of jumping to the top of the doc, it jumped to the page I was viewing most recently. But you have basic functionality for editing. I can't edit because of the content. Bad demo, sorry guys. But basic functionality for editing as well as viewing documents, Excel spreadsheets, and PowerPoints. I'd show you a PowerPoint. In fact, I might show you a PowerPoint just because I'm bold like that. Let's find out if, it'll probably take a while to open, unfortunately, but I'll give it a shot because it is kind of slick. We have a good notes and presenter view. I think this is a, oh, there you go, cool, that didn't take that long. So you can see that the view is actually presentable. The ability to actually view this, all your in slide sort of view, jump around. You've got your notes slides. You can swipe to navigate through the slides. So really cool Office Hub on iPhone. You've also got, as you see on the bottom right over there, you've got OA for iPhone. You also have OneNote for iPhone sitting right above that. So we've got a bunch of capabilities on the any device you choose to use. And it's really represents a fairly substantial investment for us because we have come to recognize the importance of these devices to you all because you've been vocal about it. And we think that we're more invested in this cross-platform experience than any, I'm fairly confident we're invested in the cross-platform experience than anybody out there. So please keep the feedback coming on that. I will show one more thing and then I'll pass it to some of my colleagues. So this is my favorite device relative to the other two I just showed, but it takes all kinds. So there's a few apps that we've shipped in the modern experience or the Windows 8 App Store experience on Windows 8. You see Yammer there, you see OneNote. You see OneNote I showed I think the other day briefly. Yeah, there's that packing checklist that I showed on stage the other day. You got the Yammer app. One of the things here that I think is really important to show is the SkyDrive Pro app. So you got that SkyDrive app for your consumer storage, but now you've got that 25 gigs of storage in SkyDrive Pro with Office 365, and you have a nice rich app for navigating SkyDrive Pro right here in a rich touch environment. Now, because we have Word installed, I should be able to open that Northwind proposal doc. I think that's the doc I just had opened on the iPhone. Yeah, there's the Northwind proposal. And so the ability to navigate your SkyDrive Pro in a really rich way is right there. So those are just a few examples of things that we're doing on cross-plat and enrich Windows 8 experiences. There's a few more things that I want to let some of my colleagues show, and then I'll come back up and maybe we can answer some questions for you guys. The first that we're going to show you is, I'm going to invite Marissa. You ready? Yeah, Marissa Salazar is going to come up, and she's going to show you a little bit of what Power BI for Office 365 looks like. Cool. Thanks. Hi. I'm going to switch you to the right input.
I don't know if anybody noticed our coordinating ninja sweatshirts as well.
Ninja hoodies, yeah.
So I'm going to go back to the slides for a second, I think. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about Power BI. As much as I would love to talk to you about other powerful subjects, it's quite exciting. And as Atala mentioned, we've been out on the showcase floor, so please come by afterwards. We have some cool other data sets pulled up on the PPI boards that you guys are free to interact with. So When we talk about Power BI, we talked a lot about these Power applications, but when it comes down to it, what users really care about is what they're able to do, what powerful story they're able to tell, and how easily they're actually able to build the tables and the charts in order to make those intelligent decisions. So I work on the deployment team focusing on end user adoption, and for me, it always comes down to empowering the users with these tools. So, making good decisions isn't always about judgment or, about experience. It's about actually having the right data and then being able to dig into that in a really effective way. And, for a lot of our end users, that's the biggest roadblock to some of these powerful BI decisions. So that's where Power Pivot comes in. It really transforms Excel into a powerhouse and lets you combine massive amounts of data from multiple sources and build relationships between them. So I'm going to switch machines as well. And let's take a look. So I'm going to go ahead and open up this internet sales doc. And as you can see, there's a lot of different worksheets, lots and lots of data. I'm going to pull up this Power Pivot portion of the ribbon. And start to look into this data a little bit. Some of the really great things that really come out of Power Pivot is the visualizations that come through in Power View, and I'll show that in a second. Being able to look through in diagram view and draw relationships between product keys, customer keys, other stories that you're willing to tell, and then actually being able to pull out these diagrams and show them in a different way. So I'm going to go ahead and click into World Sales. What's going to show up here is World Sales of bicycle helmets, I believe. And that's based on all of those other data worksheets. So this shows a heat map around the world using Bing Maps as well of bicycle helmet sales. I'm going to actually click into, I chose a place already. If we zoom into Europe, we can see the distribution across. I'm going to hover over England and actually sort the filter right there. So not only did it change up here, seeing their sales numbers, but all of these filters up on top changed as well. And these filters in the corners are also very easy to take you back to the traditional way of making a pivot table and sorting that data. So for users who aren't familiar with this type of these types of charts, these types of pivot tables, it all in the end goes back to what someone's used to. You can also pop them out, tell a compelling story that way. Click out of England. I don't know if there's any Australian data in here. So these are just some of the slicers and filters that we created in this version of Power View. I'm going to go ahead and click into sales geography by product. And as we mentioned in a note up here, you can go ahead and double click to drill in on any state. So it's totally active. It's live data. You could pull any information out of here that you would in a spreadsheet, but in a way that makes sense to a lot of people. You can hover over different cities, counties, states, et cetera. And as you're manipulating one portion of the Power View sheet, as you can see, all of the other tables are being manipulated as well based on what you're looking at. As we're making this, marketing sales decision, I might also want to look into sales by gender and year. So, you know, it's not only powerful with these mapping types of data, being able to look at heat maps across geographies, but other traditional types of tables and other fields are very powerful as well. So with just a click, we're able to go from a multiple view to a single view of sales by gender. The graphs are fully interactive. And instructions for users, like on the last table, can be added so that, you know, somebody can create this somewhere, send it out, and it's actually usable to the rest of the folks who are looking at it. So the last thing that I want to show you is my favorite, personal favorite Excel add-in, and that is Power Maps. So I'm going to leave there. And open up this European expansion worksheet. As I mentioned, you know, there's a lot of other really interesting worksheets being pulled up on the PPI screens in the showcase. And if you want to go ahead and play with some of these data sheets yourself, after watching me do it a little bit, you can go ahead and search on the Microsoft blog. There's a couple of data sheets available there as well. Fill out with instructions so you can, you know, play around and learn some things on your own. So one thing I want to point out, it is an add-in, so you want to make sure that in the background you have enabled the add-in. As a note, it's a COM add-in, and as you can see, it is chosen, so we're going to be able to use it. If you hadn't enabled that add-in, you wouldn't be seeing this map button show up on the ribbon in the insert tab. Right as I enable that map button shows up. So here on this sheet, we're looking at some statistics across Europe. We're interested in income per person, mobile subscriptions, internet speed, you know, essentially trying to make the decision from this Excel sheet of where we might want to open up, you know, our new business in Europe based on these things that are important to us. So I'm going to go ahead and click into any cell here and map that with GeoFlow. Sorry, Power Maps. Codename GeoFlow. And as you can see, it's pretty fun to play with these on touch screens. I don't know if you could see my finger there and really manipulate this data, drilling into, you know, things I'm interested in. I noticed that Luxembourg has very, very high annual income, but it's such a small country. So I'm able to actually make that note there for somebody else who's looking at the sheet or watching the tour after me. Note here, Austria stands out as a legitimate market. Maybe we're going to look into Austria a little bit more. Mobile subscriptions. You know, Austria kind of confirming my suspicions, not so distant second. We have, you know, a good amount of cellular subscriptions there. Finland, that's interesting, leader in mobile adoption. What's going on there? And then, you know, having the ability to add these tables as keys on top of the interactive map as well is really important. So now I'm going to go down into internet statistics. And this is very interesting. From the first two sheets, I kind of came to the conclusion that Austria might be a really interesting spot for me to look into more. But when looking at internet statistics, it looks like Austria lags behind in internet subscribers. So that's, you know, maybe something interesting I should take a note of. And Denmark, which we noted before, is doing much better. So, you know, where I might have made a little bit of an ill-informed decision beforehand, this has given me the ability to at least drill into it a little bit more effectively. And as important as it is to be able to drill into this data yourself, what we keep going back to is how important it is to be able to present it effectively to other people. And, you know, sending out the maps might not be the best way in this circumstance. So I already went ahead and put together a tour for somebody who might want to look at this on their own. So I could be presenting this, showing, you know, an interactive way that I was looking at the data and actually explain my thought process to somebody else who wasn't involved. So very interesting. You could see over time, internet subscribers build up. I could speed this up, slow it down. And it looks like it's over. So those are some of my favorite things in Power Maps and in Power View. And I'm going to go ahead and pass it off to Ben Walters.
Noisiest steps in the world there. Thank you, Marissa.
You're welcome.
See, now, wasn't that cool? Isn't it so much cooler when all that stuff actually works and there's no, you know, praying to demigods and those kind of things involved or required? So I'm here now to talk to you about Outlook. And the reason I'm here to talk to you about Outlook is because the truth is, Outlook is still that collection of where all of our all of our comms happens. Outlook 2013 was a big leap forward for us. We've done a lot of work, as you would have seen when we launched Office 2013, to make our devices or make our apps more touch enabled. And what I want to do is I'm not going to do slides because there's just slides. I'd prefer to jump straight in and actually start doing some demos and showing you some things. So. Cool, we're all on the same ones, we're all happy. So what I've got here is my PC and my desktop, and let's not go and steal someone else's thunder, and we'll come straight back to the inbox. So this is Outlook 2013, and just show of hands, how many people are actually running the 2013 version of Office today? Wow, that's not bad, that's good, I'm happy with that. Microsoft people in the front don't count. okay, so we're gonna work our way back here, because I just wanna get a bit of a view. Who is still running 2010? Okay, I'm pretty sure I saw someone put their hand up twice. 2007? Less. 2003? Oh, I'm glad you admitted it, but courage of your convictions. So the great thing around Outlook today is the fact that Outlook is this collection of all our comms that happens within in the business. Even when we're getting alerts from our social networks, things like Twitter and Yammer and Facebook and all that kind of stuff, all those alerts still come here. Outlook is still that central point where all of that communications comes into. And so with that, it means you end up having a whole bunch of stuff that you need to deal with. So that'll be all the emails that are coming through. And Outlook really wants to make it easier for you to work with your mail. And most of all, easier for you to work with your mail when you're on a touch-based device. So if we look at Outlook today, we've got a nice little menu at the top here where we can go ahead and switch Outlook from mouse mode to touch mode. And a couple of things will happen. I'm just going to expand this out for you so you can see. So we're in mouse mode at the moment. Everything's pretty compressed. It's really well done if I'm pointing at things with my pointer because, I have fine grain control. If I go and switch this to touch mode, you'll notice everything spaces out. Fat finger friendly. People get to be able to actually touch the things they want to play with. Other things you'll notice is we start to get some quick controls down the right-hand side here as well. And if you think about the way you work with a device, any kind of tablet device, you want to be able to have two hands and have a firm grip on that thing when you're walking around doing your mail. You don't have to try and have one hand and do this, and all of a sudden it slips off and you have a crushed screen. So we've got quick commands on the side here so that you can very easily start to access the things you want to do with your mail to process through that. Now, we had how many people have heard of pay it forward email management? Okay, cool. That died quickly, but that's all right. So Pay It Forward email management was this email management system that was set up by a colleague of mine from Microsoft in Sydney named Ian Palangio. And it was this idea of being able to process your email and actually get through it nice and quickly, an idea of actually working with an empty inbox and filing stuff. And he actually sits at the point where he'll log in the morning, check email in the morning, get it all processed and sorted, and log in at night to double check it again. And this works really, really well when you're in that process of trying to just tag through my email and get things sorted. He has three Ds, which is basically delegate it, do it, or delete it. And so when he's going through email, it's very easy for him to say, things like sports stats from Belinda Newman, don't really care, I can go ahead and delete that. It's very easy for you to be able to go and tag through your email, get things sorted nice and quickly and easily. But where Outlook really starts to come into its own in 2013 is when we start to think about the integration we have with the apps. And Atala showed you some of the Bing Maps applications that we had earlier. But they span out a lot more, and they really enable new experiences that we haven't seen in Outlook previously, enabling you to get to what we call a smart inbox. So great time. I'm going to show hands things here just to make sure everyone's awake. LinkedIn, who's on LinkedIn? Everyone who's not, you should be on LinkedIn because you can connect with all these other people really easily. But the beauty of LinkedIn is that it's this social network, right? And I want to be able to find people in my social network when I'm getting emails from them and get an idea of who's who. So you can see I've got an email here that actually has a whole bunch of apps popping up. One of the first ones there is around LinkedIn. Very easy for me to go out and tag out to LinkedIn and find out who's actually sending me an email and start to get some information on them.
Now, this has been something that you look at and some people go, well, that's kind of pointless or it's useless or it doesn't make sense. Truth is, this is actually really, really handy. And I've had we had a scenario with a colleague of mine who was using this and found information about someone and that they were actually looking for help that the original person could provide indirectly by the fact that this person was CC'd on an email. So things like these applications are helping you to be smarter with your email and actually pull information in. I'm not going to do Bing Maps because we know about that and we've seen that one come up. But we also have the ability to page through the content in the email and do things like suggest meeting spaces. So when people have, you can see in our email here, it's actually got the text that says, let's schedule a meeting for Friday, 9 a.m. at Starbucks near campus. Outlook is now smart enough to turn around and say, well, that looks like you want to schedule a meeting. How about we help you with getting that set up and going? And it'll actually go off and find a time that fits for everyone and help you get that set up and going. The other one is around task items as well. Using Tasklist and Outlook to be able to manage your day ahead and your week ahead and your month ahead and however far out you're planning, you can actually then take those tasks directly assigned to you from emails and have the Action Items app actually pick that up and start to put tasks into your Outlook for you. Yeah, we have a question. So is there a way to pick that up? So is there a way to whitelist because the Action Items app is always picking up the email disclaimers? There probably is, but you'd be kind of rolling your own app to then do that and start to find that out there. So the Action Items app, the Bing Maps app, the Meetings app are all standard out-of-the-box Microsoft-provided apps that are hosted on the Exchange environment for you by default. You could disable those apps and roll your own to include removing those disclaimers if you needed to. So as we make our way down, the other great one I love is the unsubscribe app. So how many people get these type of emails all the time? Yeah? Gumpf in your inbox, it always comes through, it's the stuff you really don't care about. So being able to very easily unsubscribe from stuff that you don't want to have to deal with is key. And again, it saves me going out to the website to do it. I can actually do this directly from within Outlook and not have to worry about the fact that I'm something I'll process later. So very, very simple. The other big thing we put forward with the new office and specifically around the new Exchange, things around mail tips and policy tips, more importantly. So mail tips are around avoiding email faux pas. When you get to that point of sending that email out with the photos from last night, and you think to yourself, "Wow, I'm going to send that out, and I'm actually going to go and send it to I'm going to go and send it to myself outside the organization as well." Let's go and set that up. If I decide I'm going to go ahead and do that, oh wait, I better pop this out to actually get that mail tip up too. It's not going to let me. Done. I can start to get mail tips informing me of what I'm doing with my contacts up front, ready to go. So it's actually going to tell me that, you know what, you're about to send this outside your organization, are you sure you want to do that? But these tips can extend further as well to help actually not only enforce policy, but notify people of policies around things that shouldn't be emailed. So if you've got staff, and I've had conversations with customers where they said, we've got staff that keep getting these emails from this Nigerian prince, and they keep sending their bank details off, and it's always a big issue, you can actually have policy tips that will pick up that information as well. So I may want to go and forward this email off, and I've got an Excel spreadsheet here that has the premium account number list on it. I'm going to go ahead and insert that. And what this is actually going to do, it'll take a little bit to go off and come back, but it's actually going to go through, look at that document and say, you know what, that document contains content that we don't want you sending around in email. In fact, we don't want you sending at all. You can see what I've got here is a policy tip. It's basically, it's informing me around the fact of doing the right thing, right? There's no point, hitting people in the face at the wrong time. You want to make sure you give them the chance to do the right thing for the company first. So I get the tip up here that actually says, you know what, this has got things in here that you might not want to send. And it's actually giving me the information up front rather than me actually having to realize later on that I went and sent out everyone's account numbers to the rest of the internet. So if I decide I can go ahead and send that, I can actually then get blocked to say, you know what, you didn't action that. We're going to stop you sending this because the policy tip says you're not allowed to send this content externally. Now, this is really, really powerful and really useful to help drive culture change in the organization and help people take ownership of the tasks they're doing because too often do staff turn around and go, I didn't know, or I got it wrong, or I wasn't aware of the policy. And the truth is, it's their responsibility to read the policy, but honestly, who's got time to sit and read the policies every time they're updated? So this is a great way to help them drive your staff, your team out there to be able to do the right thing rather than having these email incidents happen as they make their way forward. And as Atala was showing earlier, the beautiful thing around this is the fact that this also works, and let's not bring up MSN, hey? Let's not bring up MSN. Let's just go with, stop. I've seen stuff on MSN the last couple of days that's just not been good to view, right? I'm not typing well today either. All right. Don't you love these awkward silences? So the beauty is that because we've done a lot around making OWA and the online experience as well, a HTML5 experience, we get a very, very rich mail experience when we then move into the browser as well. So all of those apps you saw previously, and this will just take a second to load up for us, but all of those apps you saw previously load up in the browser the same way we saw them before. Those policy tips will also load up. So you can see the experience for me when I'm running in the browser is exactly the same experience I was using previously. If I go and bring up LinkedIn, that same LinkedIn experience will go and load. It's going to ask me if it wants to store some data locally, and that's fine. Same experience I was getting before. So it doesn't matter now if I'm running on a PC here, if I'm running on an internet cafe in the Qantas Club Lounge, checking my email via the browser, I'm checking my email via a full client, I still get that rich experience, and it's still a great experience for me to be able to work with. It's also still a very touch-enabled experience. So if I'm working on a touch device that all I have is a browser to work with, I still have the ability to go ahead and do that as I could before. The other great thing around this as well is I now have the ability to take this offline. So I can actually take my Outlook web access experience offline and actually go and do my work while I'm there, jump on a flight, continue to work on my emails, and have that sync back up when I come back online later on. Which is really, really key when we think about people who are maybe on devices that have just been provisioned or on iPad devices and they don't have the MOA apps installed and they need something that's going to run in the browser for them quickly and easily. So very, very rich experience, and lots of investments have been put in this space for that. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to hand over to Alistair to come up and show you some of the other investments we've had around some of our other applications for Office. So.
Thanks, Ben. So guys, I want to talk to you about bringing ideas to life, because we shouldn't forget that even though we've got a heap of investments around communications, collaborations, sharing, and those sorts of things, at its core, Office is a doing app, right? It's about doing stuff, about creating new documents and creating great documents as well. I like to think of this as the tool to be able to bring ideas to life. So what I want to show you is some of kind of my tips and tricks that I use in my day-to-day job using Office to its full capacity as well. So let's jump over here. And first, when we think about capturing ideas, Michael Atala showed earlier the things you can do with OneNote across all of your devices, and it's great to have a tool like OneNote in the Office family that allows you to just capture that light bulb moment at the time, at the point of that moment occurs. No matter where you are, if you're on the bus, if you're on the phone, or even if you're at your desk, sitting behind your desk on your PC as well. And so one of the things that I really love in the new OneNote 2013 is this ability here to just send to OneNote. So when you hit Windows N, you can bring up this little dialog box. Windows S, take a screenshot of whatever you're working on, file it away in your OneNote notebook. And OneNote really becomes this unstructured store of everything that you do, all the notes that you take, and it's kind of like your personal brain there as well. The other thing that we can do here is just hit Windows N, and that'll essentially bring up a sticky note for us to make a quick jot of a note. Oh, I've already got one open, I think. Minimize these. Yeah, there we go. To make a quick jot of a note here, and I can take down whatever fantastic billion-dollar business idea I have. So let's say Snapchat for grizzly bears. So I can go ahead and go around in my day, and then I can come back to OneNote, at the right time, whether I've got it on my phone or my device, have a look at it, go through my unfiled notes, my fancy brainstorming ideas, and start to work on it from there. When I'm ready to start working on something, I often look at it, from SharePoint. And as we have some great investments in SharePoint around sharing things as well, it's also a fantastic tool just to store all of your documents. You know, when we're dealing with multiple devices across tablets and phones and PCs and work PCs, home PCs, and all those sorts of things, it just doesn't make sense anymore to try and store your documents on a rickety old hard drive on one device that who knows where you could leave that sort of thing. So it's great to have this cloud storage, whether that's in Office 365 or your own SharePoint server on-premises, or whether that's SkyDrive, the consumer version to store your documents. It's just really important to get those documents off the hard drive and get them into some sort of storage, some sort of backup system that you can access it from anywhere as well. So I'll play the role of a slightly younger, Aussie-er and chubbier Michael Atala here, and I'll go through and create some documents as I go forward here as well. So I'm going to go into this folder here. And one of the great things in SharePoint 2013 and Office 365 is this ability just to create a new document. And this was always there in the web apps in 2010, but it just required you to do a little bit of extra work, set up a document template, set up a all that sort of work, and then add it in. You had to do that to every single document library you wanted to be able to just create a new document from Word and those sorts of things. But now, much easier. We can just click, one easy click, and create a new document, enter a document name here. Great. Oop. Did I just log myself out? Live demos. All right, let's create a new document here. Word document. Let's call it Snap Bear. And away we go. We can launch into the web app as well. One of the great things about starting, you know, creating new documents from SharePoint is it's just a good habit to get into because then you know it's always stored in SharePoint. It can get replicated down to your PC and down to your devices using SkyDrive Pro apps and those sorts of things. But it's just good to start that way because oftentimes if you start a document, you save it in your rickety old C drive, and then who knows where it gets stored next, and you may forget to upload it at some time down the track as well. So one of the great things about the new web app as well is it's really optimized for touch. And it may sound like a kind of a funny thing to have a web app that's optimized for touch, but as browsers get better and better, as HTML5 gets richer and richer, we can really start to take advantage of some of those features in the web apps themselves. So I can scroll around here just by touching. You can see here, I even have touch-friendly menus that get brought up in the web app, so I can very easily do those sorts of things as well. But anyway, let's start with my great idea here. Snap Bear. Insert some clip art. Bear. And while this is loading up, you can see the richness of the clip art. And this is something that kind of we often forget. Our first experience with Office clip art was Office 97 or something like that. And I really think of clip art as the first cloud service in Office because we're all streaming down from some server on the Microsoft network somewhere, pulling in all this information for you as well. But there's so much great new clip art there. We've partnered with a lot of other photography suites as well to bring in some great clip art there. So there's really no excuse for that crappy old clip art you see in documents and your admins print up and post to walls and those sorts of things as well. So I've got a bear here. And you can see up the top, I have the format, the picture tools formatting options, just like I'd have in the Office client as well. And I really think that this is a massive step forward. When you think about back to Office 2007, for those people that use Office 2007, we introduced some of these picture effects back there, the ability to very easily do picture effects in Office. It was a total rewrite of the PowerPoint processing engine and the Word processing engine to do that sort of thing. We had to do DirectX optimization. We were using the graphics processing unit and all those sorts of things. Now, fast forward 6 years later, this is being done in HTML5 in the browser, so it's quite phenomenal how fast this has come through and across as well. So let's go to a more meaningful document now and do some other things here. I'll leave this page. And I'm going to open up a slightly bigger document here. And you can see here, you know, you get a full fidelity rendering of this document in the web app as well. This is done with no add-ins, no Silverlight, no Flash, or anything like that. This is just an HTML5 rendering. Works across all major browsers as well. I can slide down with my finger, look at this sort of thing. If I zoom in, and this is something that you may not notice, but it's a really big deal when we're looking at the full fidelity experience of web apps as well. This font we're using here is not a web-safe font. Generally, you'd expect fonts to render differently on every browser, depending on what fonts are available, the particular implementation of a font, and all those different platforms as well. But with Office, there's so many more fonts that people have been using over the years and over the years. And it's probably no surprise to you that at the Office team, we're pretty big font nerds. And so we want to make sure that kerning, the look and feel of these fonts looks exactly right, whatever platform we're on. So how do you do that? That's a very big challenge. You know, we want to have full fidelity here, but we also want to have great interoperability across all those different platforms as well. So essentially the answer is kind of a little bit of trickery. What we're actually doing here is we're rendering each character as an image, and each line as an image as well. So all of these things are rendered as an image and pushed down kind of just as a PNG file there as well. And that would generally be a problem because you wouldn't be able to copy and paste that information back and forth as well. But if you've used the Office web apps much, you know that you can copy and paste, so how do you do that? And it's kind of just a little bit of a trick in the JavaScript, but we actually just have the text hidden behind the document that's rendered, so you can still select the text, and you can still do those sorts of things and interact with it as if it was a real Word document, even though it's just rendered as a web page as well. So let's jump back here. Don't save that one. A couple of other great things that I really like about the web app as well. When you have all your documents in the web app and you just want to browse through and look at documents, you don't necessarily need to open them up in Word or something like that when you're just reading and noting. But also, you can start to comment and annotate in these documents as well. And as you have your documents in a shared source like SkyDrive or SharePoint or something like that, it's much easier for you now to collaborate in the same document without having to email it around. And then the dreaded merge five different documents and five different comments back into the one document before you can work on it as well. And so the commenting here inside the web app is really fluid as well. You can see here I've got comments here. I can click down and zoom in and show me where that comment occurs as well. I can also now start to do nested comments inside of the Office documents as well. So I think, great idea. Oh, grest idea. Luckily, we have spell check. And we can post that comment just in the document as well, so now everyone can look at those comments. I don't have to be in edit mode of the document. I don't have to have edit permissions to that particular document. I can just start to do this and start to comment and collaborate and give feedback on the document as I go through in a really easy way as well. So editing the document, I can edit the document in the web app, or I can edit the document in Word. And just a seamless transition then into Word to continue editing that document with kind of the full capabilities of Word that I'm used to as well. For those that are on Office 2010, Office 2013's interface shouldn't be a big shock to you. If you're on earlier versions, if you're on Office 2007, you know, we had the round Office orb at the top left corner there. You know, and the idea behind that was when we were developing Office 2007, we were developing Windows Vista at the same time. We thought, wouldn't it be great if we had a Windows button down the bottom left-hand corner and an Office button at the bottom, at the top right, at the top left-hand corner? People would just get that. And of course, a lot of people deployed Office 2007 on Windows XP. And so they didn't see that. And so what has gone on with the file menu? Where is the file menu gone? It's gone. It's broken. I don't understand this new Office interface. And so in 2010, we brought back the file menu. And unlike Windows, we have no plans to remove the file menu from Office. So you should be rest safe in your knowledge that it'll be there. But the file menu does a different thing these days than the old file menu as well. And we really started to disambiguate the commands in Office of the ones that work in the document, that apply to the document, that apply to the content. And all those commands we put in the ribbon. So you can see here, all of these commands here are things done on the document itself. They're editing commands. They're things that you do in the document itself. But there's a whole other series of commands that you do with the document as some part of larger object. And that's what we put into the file menu now in this information pane here. And it's the information pane that surfaces up a lot of that interesting content. And when you want to act on the document itself as a whole, as part of some larger workflow, you want to share it with people, add permissions to people, add metadata and those sorts of things in the document as well. We can protect the document. Very simple here. Some basic ones like marketer's final to tell people that, hey, this document is the final version. It's a read-only version. We can do things like restricting editing, applying information rights management to the documents as well. And we can even add a digital signature to the document as well. So it doesn't lock the document, doesn't prevent it from being edited. But what happens when you edit a document that has a digital signature applied on it, where it automatically removes that digital signature So it's a really interesting feature if you want to kind of confirm the authenticity of a document that you're sending to other people outside your organization, perhaps, and you don't have rights management or federation or anything like that in place to do those trusted connections. So another thing that's kind of interesting now is in the save menu. And one of the things I love about the new save menu inside of the info pane is that we're really promoting SharePoint, we're promoting SkyDrive, and we're promoting that modern 21st century storage over just saving down to the computer. And of course, this is all configurable by the user. You can configure this by group policy, you can point it to network shares or anything like that. We are making a stand here. We are saying, you know, by doing it this way, that hey, it's time to move your documents out of My Documents onto some practical, better storage system as well. And you can see these folders roam across the documents. You can see my recent folders that I've opened here. I can browse for more. And it just treats it. It makes it easier to save to these storage methods. It's much easier to save there than it is, perhaps, to save onto your My Documents. And that's what we're really trying to get to here, is just lower the bar so it's easier for people to use that. It's more feature-rich for people to use this online storage rather than having to try and save into their My Documents folder as well. Because if it's just a little bit easier to save to My Documents, users are lazy. I'm lazy. I'd always save back to my My Documents as well. So doing it this way is a nice way to kind of start to nudge people in the right direction of modernizing the way they work as well. So a couple of other things I'll show in this document before we move on as well. The first thing here, you can see some of this scrolling we do here. And this is much more fluid scrolling as well. It's something that you may not notice at first, but as you type, you can see that there's a natural move of how the cursor is moved and selects. And it's a very subtle feature here, but it's much more organic. It's much easier on the eyes. And you find that as you're using the documents over a long period of time, you get a lot less eye strain. You don't have those jarring movements that you used to have in Office 2007 and 2010 as well. But as we go into here, I'll just select this image here. And you can see some of these options here. This is just another way of surfacing more commands in Office into the user experience without having to open up the ribbon and those sorts of things. In context, commands like this make it a lot easier for people to, say, move around the text wrapping, change the way the document's laid out, and those sorts of things, rather than have to try and hunt through the ribbon, hunt through the interface to try and find those sorts of features as well. Easy things like resizing this document as well. Just change the nature of it. And you can see as I move this around, as I scale it down, and start to move around, you can see guidelines that sort of this document kind of grips to different ways as well. It sort of sticks to where I want to move it. So it's easier for me to line up and just make a really professional looking document without having to really mess around with it, without having to be a graphic designer per se as well. So that's a couple of my favorite features in Word. And finally, once you have a great Word document like this, often you want really compelling images to put in it as well. So let me just show you one of my favorite features in Visio here as well. This is a Visio document. I love working in Visio. There's a whole lot of things that you know I can do in Visio, diagrams, pictures, and those sorts of things. You can even import AutoCAD files. So this is an AutoCAD file I imported into Visio. And it looks pretty basic, but it's great to be able to kind of use that without having to install AutoCAD or even understand how AutoCAD works. There's a couple of things that we can do to make this Visio diagram look a little bit more interesting if we're going to put in a Word document or something like that as well. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to format the shape. I can do a number of different things. I can change the color of the shapes and those sorts of things. But what I can do really simply is do a 3D rotation of this document. If I want, say, an isometric view, in one click, I can render this shape, this AutoCAD shape, in an isometric form here. So really cool here to make kind of a more 3D design here, even though it's a flat file and something like that. Just tilting it up in Visio, getting a different rotation, makes it look a lot better when I eventually put it into my document or into slides or something like that. So this is my new global headquarters of SnapBear. And I can take that, change the colors of it, change the glow effects and any of those sorts of things, just in a shape as well. And of course, it's Office. So you're always used to things like just being able to copy it and paste it into other documents and those sorts of things as well. It'll copy it through as its native format. So if we want to go back and edit it later or anything like that, we can do it. It's still potentially a pretty big file, so I can resize it and crop it down and those sorts of things as I move it in as well. So finally, let me just show you some of the things in PowerPoint. Once you have all these great ideas, once you've used tools like OneNote to kind of unstructured pull all that data together, and use tools like Word to give it some structure and those sorts of things, the final thing that you want to do is persuade your audience or your stakeholders or whoever you're asking the hundreds of millions of dollars to start your next big idea. You'll generally use PowerPoint to do that. And PowerPoint has changed a little over the years as well. So let me show you some of the cool things in PowerPoint now. I'll just go into presenter mode. And what I want to show you is the presenter view inside PowerPoint 2013. So you can see here, this is kind of your presenter dashboard. If you're presenting out that slide there on your laptop or your tablet or something like that, you can see this presenter mode here, and it can give you all the notes, all the commands that you want to look at and look for very easily here as well. Some of the really nice things that PowerPoint does is gives you this nice kind of zoom it ability. So if you're one of those people that loves putting diagrams and charts and size 9 text in your documents, when you present, you can make it easier for the audience to kind of zoom in or for you to zoom in and just draw the audience's attention to certain things throughout that document as well. Kind of replaces those tools like Zoom It and those sorts of things that you used to use as well. You can also see there's a timer up the top. So you don't need a special timer just to do your presentations. You can look here. If you're worried about certain bits going too long, you can kind of pause the timer, reset the timer, start counting from those sorts of things as well, in a very simple manner here as well. But some of the other things that you may want to do, and while traditionally our approach has been to kind of present slides in a very linear format, more and more now we're using PowerPoint kind of as the center of a discussion. So we may have 10 or 15 people in the room, we want to kind of discuss different things, we have different data points, we don't really have a structured presentation with a beginning, middle, and end. Instead, we just have a lot of information that we want to discuss. So very easy, you can use the slide sorter here to jump across, jump forward, and look at this particular information in a very easy manner as well. Jump to that slide. You don't have to kind of remember that that's slide 5, so I'll just kind of key in slide 5 really quick and jump ahead and those sorts of things as well. So finally, one of the really interesting features of PowerPoint is that even though it's grown up as this tool that you present face-to-face in front of people, there are a lot of things that we do to integrate it with Link to be able to present real-time to people anywhere in the world. But also, we can also have the ability inside of PowerPoint to actually record a PowerPoint as well. So we can actually create a video just in PowerPoint here. We can go through and we can run it. We can actually record a narration of those slides, so essentially building a PowerPoint video with the slides, with the narration, with timings, with the transitions and those sorts of things. We can save that out as an MP4 file, send it around to users so you have a recording of a presentation. It's also a really good thing if you want to just record it before you're giving a really important presentation or something like that. You can play it back and learn from it and those sorts of things. And this is all just built into PowerPoint. It's not a separate tool. It's not a separate application you need to learn how to run. It's just a very easy way to kind of rehearse, record, and then publish out those slides as well. So that's really the approach to bringing ideas to life. You know, capture the moments with OneNote. It's there in your pocket on your phone. It's on your tablet. It's on your desktop. It's on your laptop. It's always available for you to kind of create all those notes and create your own personal wiki. Then you can use tools like Word and Visio to bring a much richer structure to the document. You start to put your ideas in line. We're moving away from this world of the document being a paper-based document to the document being primarily electronic, right? Even though when you open up Word now, you kind of can see that A4 size paper, chances are that Word document will never, ever see an A4 piece of paper, right? It'll exist. It was born electronically. It'll be shared electronically. It'll probably be archived or destroyed electronically as well. So we can be a lot more flexible with how we look at Word documents now. We don't have to stick to black and white text and those sorts of things. We can embed video, get much richer content into these documents as well. Socialize the idea with SharePoint. SharePoint, SkyDrive, SkyDrive Pro, depending on your use case, whether it's for home, whether it's for work. We have tools that are so much richer now than just saving things to My Documents. The web apps really complement that as well. The web apps bring you a much richer way of accessing that document wherever you are. You don't have to have your PC there or anything like that. And finally, you can persuade your stakeholders with PowerPoint. So thank you very much for listening. I'll bring back Michael, and we'll move on for some question time. Cheers.
Yeah, we can bring everybody back
yeah.
up.
Yes.
Why don't you guys come up too? So I hope that gave you a little bit of a snapshot of some of the things that have changed over the last year, some of the cool things you can do with Office, hopefully a couple of the gems that you can take back to your users or for your own use. We have about 10 minutes left, and we are happy to take questions about anything you saw today or anything you've been wondering about, or if you just want to see something else that you noticed on one of those machines, we're glad to show it. So we'll take a few questions. I think the Plantronics guys were nice enough to give us a bunch of pretty cool Link headsets that all the question askers, including the gentleman who asked one earlier, if he's still here, can carry out with them. So with that, I'll open the floor up, but otherwise, really, thank you for your time and thank you for coming out for this session.